Well, hello and welcome to this brand new podcast from Stockbox. We've spanned it out of the traditional Market Musings podcast from Stockbox that we've been recording for a while. But a regular guest on that podcast is indeed Charles Archer, the financial analyst. And we've enjoyed doing these podcasts with Charles. And the plan is to make them far more regular. So we're launching today the Market Insights podcast featuring Charles Archer. So very pleased to be starting that today. And our guest joining us today is Darren Hazelwood from Panther Metal. First of all, Charles, welcome. How are you?
I'm not doing too shabby. I have builders in the house. They're replacing all the windows. They're on the last window at the moment, so I'm very hopeful they'll be gone by the end of the day. How are you, Mark?
Okay. Oh, you'll have nice new windows then. That's good. Good for you.
Yes. I don't know. We were thinking about moving, but I decided it was too stressful, so we're just upgrading everything.
Upgrading. Okay. Probably a good idea, given the craziness in the housing market. But we're not here to talk about that today. Darren, how are you?
I'm very well, Mark. Thanks. Hi, Charles.
Hiya.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Looking forward to this because, we're going to really get a bit of a bigger picture of Panther Metals, where the company's come from, where the company's focusing. And Darren's hopefully going to tell us about some plans. We can all get a better idea of what Panther planned to do to build shareholder value. And I'm glad Charles is here as well because Charles, of course, very knowledgeable in the space. I know he's got some questions for Darren. But, I mean, I remember, Darren, the very first presentation you did. I think it was Walsall.
It was.
Probably was Walsall. And I remember you sort of talking, and it was very sort of high level. I think it was one of the first presentations you ever made. I remember you talking enthusiastically about the land packages you had, the team you'd assembled. But it definitely lacked, detail. But, you know, for the first presentation and for the first, getting started with the company, what more can you expect, really? It was the vision that I think was in your head that you could see. But I'd like to know how you feel, really, I think, first of all, going back. I mean, when was that? Was that 5 years ago? 6 years ago?
It was actually May 2018.
Right.
So what we've done is refinanced a palm olive business on the next market, which is now Aquis. I was part of a team that injected around 300,000 cash into that business. So it had zero assets and with a view of building an exploration-focused business. And by the time we'd sort of washed it all out and everything else, we ended up with about 200 grand with zero assets. And that was the starting point and the trigger. Now, we knew fairly early that we had to get it onto a trading market. And I took the helm in the January of 2019 with my sole aim was to get it onto a trading market. Because at the time, to be fair to the Aquis team, the market is different there now. But at the time, you'd maybe trade once every 3 months, and your spread could be 90%. It was absolutely insane. But it wasn't conducive to building a business at that point. So, anyways, cut a long story short, I took over in January 19, and my sole aim was to get the business listed onto a tradable market. During that period as well, we built up the Big Bear project, started off with a few claims and eventually built the project out by doing multiple deals. And that's a nice project. Fulcrum have it now. And hopefully we'll see them do some work on it because it does deserve that. But that's by the by. Got the business listed in the January of 2020, so it took about 11 months. People forget. Market in the autumn of 2019 was very reminiscent of the market that we've been in for the last 2 years. And we come to market, we raised circa 800 grand, of which half of that in reality went on our listing costs. So we come to market with a very small pot. You can look back at those times and and certainly identify the mistakes that were made. But that's not a regret. And of course, January 2020, we got listed and welcome into the world of COVID by the end of the February. So we want to talk about out of the frying pan into the fire. And we used the COVID period to increase our asset base to dispose of some. We exited Australia by the listing of our Australian assets on the ASX into a completely separate vehicle that we still own circa 21% of. We did a deal with Fulcrum on Big Bear. We bought in the Ebonga Greenstone Belt. And I also bought in Dotted Lake. Dotted Lake's probably as an individual project. We own that 100%. It's got no underlying financial instrument. And I put that deal together for circa $26,000, so about £15,000. And I would say that's probably my single best piece of business. And we also have got the option agreement over at Manitou, and that completes the company. I've never been one that wants a brochure full of assets. What I'm looking for is to have assets that we believe have the potential to become a mine. Okay. I'm not scared to lose assets accordingly. And we could finally get into Canada in the September of 2021. And joy of joys, we know what happened in early 2022 with risk capital coming off the market sort of globally. So we haven't ever been static during those periods. I've used those periods to advance the business and to increase our offering and to actually nail down and focus in on the potential assets. And I'm very, very happy where we're at now. My dream has always been to is to ultimately build a mid-tier. What do you class a mid-tier? I would say 50 million to 500 million in revenues, probably a 500 million market cap plus. And that would be the start of the process to becoming a mid-tier. And
actually, 500 dream million market cap plus, that's big.
From a 4 million market cap, that's not a bad payday. But what kind of time scale are you looking at? You want to get a 500 million market cap?
Timescales, it's got to be a process. And we know that the timelines in terms of bringing in or dealing with assets, creating a mine, for instance, if you want the cash flow, you need to create a mine.
Yeah.
And the way that I've looked at the process that we're in is you could use GGP as an example. They were very similar size. I think when they made the Javier on Discovery, they were probably a 3 million market cap. And within 3 years, they were 1.5 billion. So with the right discoveries, that's very possible. And with Panther, I believe on Ebonga, certainly, that has the potential, just down to its sheer scale. It probably is a major's playground, but that's exactly where juniors should be looking.
Well, okay, on Ebonga, given you know this is probably the most interesting asset that you have, the prospect areas you've got Wishbone, Awkward, Survey, Ottertooth, Silver Rim. What to you is the most exciting from a geological perspective, or do they all have their own individual quirks that make you excited about all of them?
Right, that's a really great expression, quirks, because two of them are very quirky. And what they deserve is just put a drill hole in to actually see what's there.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that, everybody, if you talk to people, they will say, right, you have to do XYZ, right? But actually, where they're situated on Ebonga if we did X, Y, Z, we could actually just put a hole in there, drill it and find out.
Yeah.
For the same money. So that's very much our approach. And that's on regarding Otter Tooth and Silver Rim. So Otter Tooth is, it's got a bullseye remnant mag, target. And our work today on survey and wishbone, and it goes a long strike along the same zone, and just makes it a bullseye target. So we could go there, we could do stripping, we could do soil sampling, we could do everything that you'd normally expect within the process.
Yeah.
Or have a camp on site that's drilling somewhere else, and the guys go there and put a hole in the ground.
And see what happens.
Find out. Right? Yeah, you've got to be seeing. The problem is the market has made it such that they've put the fear of God up to these companies. And they are really scared to fail. But the truth is that 98% of the time, you're going to fail in this industry. So if the math makes sense to go there and just drill the target, you've got sound geological reasons for drilling it. Drill it.
Well, so, it's funny, isn't it? Because there's your view, which is, you know, get some initial data and then just go for it. And there's some people who are like, you know, I'll list them all. You got magnetic, gravity, seismic, electromagnetic, resistivity, IP surveys, soil sampling, stream sediment sampling, rock chip sampling, biogeochemical sampling, gas geochemistry, portal XRF, laser ablation, inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometry, pathfinder element analysis. You know, you can spend your life doing geotechnical and geochemical surveys and hydrogeological surveys and groundwater conditions and you know, all of this stuff. And you can be doing it for years and years. Some of these companies do, right? They spend years doing all of it. And then they put a drill in the ground, there's nothing there. And there is a happy medium, isn't there? There is a happy medium where you're saying it's a bullseye target, but you must have enough data to justify putting the hole in the ground.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When you compare it to survey, see, what you've also got to bear in mind with this is that's unique to the position where it is on that greenstone belt.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a drive up target 50 yards off of the road. Right. So once you've got the infrastructure in place to conduct a drilling campaign and you've got a bullseye target sort of 10 kilometers over here, that as an individual target, you could spend $1 million sort of trying to prove up. And probably get no further forward than you already are, in reality.
Yeah.
So go there whilst you're there, while you've got the infrastructure in place, and then drill it and either kill it or make a discovery.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. That's been our approach that's proved very successful. So give you an example, survey, very similar, but over a lot broader scale than Otter Tooth. Right. It had one very, very shallow hole put in it in the 60s. And when I say shallow, we're talking 47 feet.
More like auger drilling.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't actually. It was actually, there's a diamond hole.
Really? Was that shallow?
Yeah, it was that shallow.
Why? Do you have any idea why?
They were testing a near surface anomaly.
Oh, okay.
And it didn't intercept any mineralization, but what it did intercept in such a short hole was massive sulfide. So straight, you look at that, you think, why have they never followed up? This is a 3 kilometer by half a kilometer target, right?
Yeah.
Why are they not followed up? They hit massive sulfide. So our approach there was to look at the most prospective area and go and put a single hole in. Because again, it's such a big area. We on its own, we could have spent 2, 3, 4 years on the ground proving that up as a target.
Yeah.
And that would have cost $1 million, $2 million. And what do you end up doing? You end up drilling the anomaly anyways.
Yeah.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
So we decided we'd put one hole in and actually just to have a look. It's a prospecting hole in effect. Are we looking to make a discovery? Yes, of course we are. Well, we know that the chances of that are almost zero. But what we're going to do is start to build a picture of what's actually going on in the ground. We can see from the MAG and the EM that it's highly prospective. We can see from historic data that it's interesting. So we put one hole in, and that one single hole, it wasn't the discovery, but what it did prove, and this was done through the metallurgical work it was then able to do, that it is a VMS system on its own. And it's 3 kilometers by half a kilometer. We hit something like 4.14% zinc over 14 meters, which, whilst that grade isn't great, but the network proved what we needed to know. Now we go there and we step out drilling.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all you can do in that system. So that approach has been shown to actually be really effective, but you've got to have some cojones to take that approach. That's how Dome were built in the 70s.
Right?
Dome would attack anomalies. They ended up getting bought out by a major in the 80s. They're an extraordinarily successful company. But that has been chipped away. That approach has been chipped away over the years, because the market will mark down anybody doing any true exploration. They make it very difficult for companies to fail in terms of what they're doing.
Amarok Minerals, they're doing some exploration, a lot of drilling in Greenland, and they're having some really good grades. But one of their campaigns, there was like 3 holes, I think they did, and they just found nothing, and they were able to say, we found nothing. And I was thinking, when was the last time a company said, actually, we thought there was something there, and it's not? You know, it's so rare that you get it. And it's kind of, as you say, it's mad, because most exploration doesn't come to anything. Do you know? That's the name of the game.
And the only way you truly find out is by putting drill holes in the ground.
Yeah, 100%.
And people seem to have lost. But that's also the only way that you transform the company. And if people want to mess around on surface, that's fine. I totally respect that and get it. And I know I understand the need to do that. But I actually know James at Amarok.
Oh, do you? Yeah, yeah.
He's a very good guy and really good guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's actually in Greenland at the moment. But
he makes me laugh. He's a funny chap. Successful as well.
Very, 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 very smart geologist.
Yeah.
But with a bonga, it really is a very, very simple process now. We know that we've put 5 holes into Wishbone's a huge system. So to go back to your original question, what's your main title? Let's run through Bonga, how we're doing it, why we're doing it like we are, and the reasoning behind it. So you've got 2 speculative areas. You've got Otter Tooth that we've covered off, and you've also got Silver Rim. Silver Rim's really interesting. There's 2 anomalous bodies that almost touch. There's about 50 meters between them. You've got directly next to those 2 anomalous bodies is a small lake, which I've been to, I've visited. And the lake sediment sample there, lithium was something like 643 ppms, which is the second highest anomalous lithium shown in lake sediments in that region. Now, bearing in mind, you've got Green Tech, probably 100 kilometers away, but on the same belt, that have got this is a big lithium area. But combined with that, you've got over 2,000 parts per million in rare earths overlaying it as well.
Yeah.
You've got a big silver grade, hence the name Silver Rim. It was probably been Lithium Ring if it was named post the lithium boom.
No. Well, that's the name of the game, isn't it? Comes to the mountain. What was it, Spodumene Hill that Andrada have? Yeah, they get named for the minerals, don't they? And then, to be fair, I mean, I can't. What was it, Sovereign? I can't remember. There was a graph. I can't remember if it was Sovereign or not. there was a graphite company exploring out in somewhere in Africa, and they're the locals called the Mountain Graphite Mountain. And it'd been called Graphite Mountain for as long as anyone can remember. And somebody thought, should we go check if there's graphite there? And lo and behold, you know, mass graphite system. And you're just sometimes it pays to just, you know, learn the local language because people know, you know. But
chat to the locals.
Well, we have, I mean, based on Ubongo, you had a progress update at the start of this month, and a magnetic geophysical drone survey. So it seems to me that, yes, you've done this whole drilled into the survey anomaly. Is essentially, you've got the drill permits for Otter Tooth and Silver Rim. Is it time to get drilling on those pretty soon then? Is that the idea?
Look, within the next 12 months, you will see comprehensive campaign on Ubongo. The likes are very rarely seen amongst a junior explorer. We've been working towards this. So getting the permit for Wishbone, which is a big, big system. It's quite interesting. Our marketing, we sort of say we're uncovering the next VMS camp in Canada, which is an absolutely outrageous statement for a junior explorer at a 3.5-4 million market cap, right? People should be coming to say, how can you say that? You know, that's outrageous.
I mean, off air, I did say that to you a couple of days ago.
And I've fully justified it to you, and you've gone, fair enough.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's why it hasn't been critiqued, because the realities are that we have a chance of uncovering the next VMS system in Canada.
What does that mean, though, Dan? What does it mean if you uncover the next VMS system in Canada? What does that actually mean? You talked about GGP making that discovery. Do you not need that discovery, or can you just go out saying, we've got the next VMS camp in Ontario? What does that actually mean?
We're not
mean?
Saying we've got it. If we've got it, we're a 200 million market cap mark. But we're saying we're uncovering it, because ultimately, show me another junior globally that's found two VMSs in the same, on the same greenstone belt that they control, out of a total of six holes. That's outrageous. And it's these rocks are 2.5, 2.7 billion years old. So these systems have been twisted and turned. So, you know, it's not, if it was sitting there at surface with a little flag on it, you know, that's already a mine 60, 70 years ago, right? So they take some finding. But all you can do is look at history, and you've got the Sturgeon's Lake Greenstone Belt 80 kilometers away. Mm. Now, Jim Franklin, who sadly recently passed away, he is the preeminent VMS expert, or was the preeminent VMS expert in Canada. Okay. And Jim's view was that Ubongo and Sturgeon's Lake are sister greenstone belts. One's been explored and developed, the other has remained unexplored. And when you look at Sturgeon's had five past producing mines, all of them produced to a commercial level in the late 60s, 70s, 80s. I think the last one closed in the early 90s. And actually, Glencore were on there last summer exploring, still in the Sturgeon's Lake. Then you move across, and the reason is VMS systems tends to cluster. Well, they do cluster. If you find one, likelihood increases that you're going to find another. It's a bit like the old tale, where do you look for a mine? In the head frame of an existing mine, right? VMS systems, where do you look for the next VMS deposit? Next to a VMS deposit. And so on Ubongo, nobody had ever proved that it contained any VMS, and we have. But we haven't just proved it in one area, we've proved it in two. We think there's a chance Otter Tooth will be a third. And that then, but even Sturgeon's Lake, no one controlled Sturgeon's Lake like we control Ubongo, nowhere near.
But does a VMS on its own mean, what does it mean? I mean, because we know what a VMS is. Most people in this space know what a VMS is. But do you not need to have that discovery? Do you not need to have that kind of discovery of the commodity that's accumulated down there rather than just saying, look, we're guys, we've got VMSs?
And what do you do to make that discovery, Mark?
Drill it.
Drill it.
What have we been issued? Yeah, we've got the drill permit now at Wishbone. We have the permits in place for survey. We have the permit in place for Ubonga. Now, what you've now got to take a step back and say, right, as a business, we need to get out of the sort of sub 20 million pound market cap merry-go-round, should we call it? Polite, is that a polite way of putting it?
Mm-hmm.
And the way for us to do that in terms of Ubonga. Now you've got to remember, Ubonga is a majors playground, but juniors shouldn't really be there. And the only way for us to efficiently do what we need to do on Ubonga is operating exactly the manner that I've talked about, and that would mean carrying out a campaign at Wishbone, Survey, Awkward, and Ottertooth and Silver Rim, basically all on the same program.
Right, yeah, so hitting everything.
You put your infrastructure in place, and then suddenly we're acting like a major, but we're a microcap junior.
Okay, I've got two questions for you before we go any further. First question, because I know this area, access to places like Ubonga, what's your kind of like your road access or your plans? And second question. Actually, no, answer that one first.
Right, that's a very straightforward question to answer.
Right, okay.
As it stands, we are helicopter supported.
Right.
Now, the Greenstone Belt itself is, and this is why the Greenstone Belt was available, basically. The Greenstone Belt itself is surrounded by roads and historic logging trails.
Right.
To the south, and it's 2.5 hours from Thunder Bay. And it's the access is the reason that it's never been properly explored.
Yeah.
So the access, you've got the 811 that comes up from the south. It comes off of the main Armstrong to Thunder Bay Road. And it's a leg off of that that comes south of Ubonga. And it actually touches the Ubonga Greenstone Belt as it then heads north, joins the historic logging roads, and you can come in that way. However, on the 811, there was a bridge that the government took out 15 years ago.
Right.
And the most logical route in is that way. And then you've got road access. We'd have to put in trails. That would be down to talking with the indigenous communities as well. So we're not saying that's totally possible. But we do know that there would be support for that bridge to be reinstated.
Right.
Okay. The bridge to be reinstated, we're looking at around $700,000.
Could you, share that cost with other companies that would benefit from it potentially? Or I don't know. I mean, this is the only thing that there's a few things, but obviously that's a stumbling block potentially.
It's actually a stumbling block that we've got the answer to.
Yeah, I suppose. You know what to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what to justify that cost, which is not a lot. When I say $700,000, we're talking about £350,000 in sort of sterling terms.
Yeah.
That would open up the entire belt to access, vehicular access. As it stands, to go through that permitting process, to actually go through having that reinstated, would take some time. And it doesn't, as I say, doesn't come without cost. So rather than us disturbing the area to that extent, we took the decision we can get right onto Ubonga on the peripheries, and then we'll do helicopter supported until such a time that we have a discovery that warrants that investment.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember that once we get that discovery, Panther's not going to exist very long after.
It'll just take him out. But then the question is...
It's too big.
It goes to my second question then, Darren. How, you know, and it's kind of the elephant in the room, but I guess we have to address it. How are we going to fund this exploration, this drilling that you want to do to prove it up, to get it to that point? You may not be able to answer that in full at the moment.
No, I can't answer it in full. And I certainly don't want to be in a position on.
You don't want to shoot yourself in the foot, potentially.
Yeah, that's right.
Potential funding partners, for example.
We don't want the FCA police coming after me or you or Mark.
No.
So as it stands, we can potentially fund everything that we want to and what we aim to do on Ubonga.
Right.
We've now got the permitting in place. So don't forget, we've just had issued Wishbone and we've just had issued Awkward West.
Right.
So we've now got permits at Wishbone, Awkward, Survey, Ottertooth, Silver Rim. Never in history has anyone managed to have so many permits in place at one time to drill on that area.
Okay.
So that makes the conversations that have already taken place a lot easier. If I sit down with someone and say, look, this is our plan, this is our proposal, they say, great, go and do it. Say, oh, well, we can't. We've got two of the five permits we need.
Yes.
Now we've got a full house.
Yeah.
Now, when you're talking to people, that's transformative.
And so,
for obvious reasons.
When you're talking to people, it sounds like you are, but you maybe can't say yet. What's your kind of preferred? Because I know there are other operators in the area that go with like earnings where they're, you know, on the hook for some exploration expenditure. And there's others that kind of go with 50-50 JVs. Are you kind of, do you like free carries? Is that kind of what you prefer? Do you prefer giving up more of the asset and then not having to worry about exploration expenditure? Or is it something that, you know, you're not sure, you're kind of on the fence about?
No, not on the fence at all. I've got a very, very clear opinion on this.
Oh, hit me with it.
I don't believe in doing low-level, early-stage deals. We're a junior explorer. And to be a junior explorer, I have to be prepared to wear a tin hat of failure. And I accept that from day one.
Yeah.
But the other flip side to this is junior explorers have to be right once.
True.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once. And they can be wrong 100 times. As soon as you're right once, you're away.
Mm.
Okay. And Panther, we haven't been wrong yet. And I don't believe in low. I'm an explorer. I've got people investing money into my company who are looking for multiple returns on their investment. They're not looking for a safe 4% dividend per annum and steady capital growth over 15 years. If you want to play that game, you know, there's plenty of opportunities and there's plenty of analysis out there that will enable you to cover that game. People in Panther want, they put their risk capital in, they want 20, 30, 40, 100 times upside.
Mm.
Now, they need that to offset their losses.
Yeah.
If I do low-level deals without putting a drill hole in the ground, they've never got a chance of making those returns that they deserve by investing in Panther.
Mm.
Because I call it the heroin shot of low-level deals. You know, you do a very low-level deal, somebody comes along and drills it, then you have to either fund your portion of it, but at a very low level. Now, I put a drill hole in the ground and it's there, and we're away. And we can do deals at 20, 30 times that size, and probably with bigger companies as well, almost certainly with bigger companies. But I'm an explorer, Charles. You know, come and hit me with it. Come, Darren, you drilled and you failed. No shit, Sherlock. You know, we're an explorer. If you want exploration success, explorers have got to be able to fail. But at the same time, I've got to be right once. And we've never failed. We drilled Dotted Lake for gold. We hit gold at quite sensible grades along the entire hole. We had 10 different intercepts of gold, some of it up to 1.84 grams. Now, there wasn't the continuity in it, but we were right to drill it. We drilled Manitou. Again, that's gold. We were drilling a shear zone. Now, that has anomalous gold in that shear zone. So it deserved drilling. Now, it didn't have the grade that would be ever support anything of any interest. However, we weren't wrong to drill it.
No.
We weren't scared to drill it. And at Wishbone, we've drilled 5 holes at Wishbone. We've hit 11.6% zinc over half a metre.
Yeah.
We've hit 4 separate lenses in the same system, previously undiscovered. The VMS system there is massive. We know, I'll mention Bruce Gemmell. Bruce Gemmell's looked at core, and he's a preeminent VMS expert over that side of the world. We had Jim Franklin's calendar, who's sadly gone. But Bruce has looked at our core in our warehouse from the bay. Bruce has gone, guys, what you've done, you've drilled the center of a subsea-4 VMS. Mm. And subsea-4, I'm not going to go into technical details, but subsea-4 VMS core, it tends to be barren. And that's due to how the qualities within it dissipate.
Yeah.
On a seafloor VMS, you'll get the core will be mineralized. Subsea-4. But subsea-4 VMSs are better for tonnage and grade. And that's why we can step out our drilling. We've hit one hole in survey. We've hit a VMS system. We've put 3 small holes at awkward, and we've hit graphite at 27.2 meters over 2.25%. Yeah, our geological team are absolutely amazing. We're coming that close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and now because of our success, we're able to fly the drone. We've got 25 meter spacings. It's 3D analyzed. This is going to enable us to now really home in.
I think I feel like we've covered, you know, the most important bits. Maybe we should come do another podcast in the future. But I'm wary. I don't want to take up everybody's time. I guess it, you know, maybe to finish off with the next 6 to 12 months. What does success look like? What are the plans? You're just saying drilling. What are you hoping to see? You know, this time next year, what are you hoping to have accomplished?
I will be very, very disappointed if we haven't got 2 discoveries of note.
That's a very black and white answer. Do you reckon more than 2 discoveries?
And I'll stand by it. What's the date? You know, we're end of July 2024, let's make the end of July 2025 a date. We haven't discussed Dotted Lake.
No.
Dotted Lake has taken us 13 months to get this permit. When you look at what GT Resources' success has been, Glencore now owns 16.7% of GT Resources.
Exactly.
You look at the exploration model GT Resources used, we're piggybacking on the back of that model, right? Neil Pettigrew has done some amazing work. And I take no shame in saying, turn that across to what Panther have got. We've got the soil anomalies. We've got the structures. We've got the grade. And ours is in a lot more confined area. The Tycho belt is over 20 kilometers. They've had 6 discoveries over 20 kilometers. We've got 4 individual serious targets over 3 kilometers in a zone that's got 2 intrusive bodies that have come through, and it remains undrill tested.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
And if you look further ahead, you're hoping then capex costs lower, opex costs lower, potential discovery size, concentration, grades potentially higher. Lots of upside. Exactly. But it's you know, what you're essentially saying is that 12 months from now, hopefully you've got 2, you know, maybe district scale discoveries, or you might want to say mid tier, you know, potentially to grow larger, and the market's undervaluing you at the moment. But I suppose you know, like many others,
listen, everyone can moan about their market. What people need to appreciate is that I'm now looking 2 to 3 years ahead. I know where we're at for the next year. I know how we're funding it. I know. You know, that will become clear. But I'm now looking 2 to 3 years ahead in my planning. We've been waiting to get to the point where we can attack a bonga efficiently, not just do it. See, we could spend years going to bonga, go here, come off, go here, come off, go here, come off, go here. It's going to kill us. You're going to have 2 billion shares in issue, and everyone's going to be wondering what the hell's going on. Instead, we've been fortunate enough to have our investors be patient, allow us to take this route. We make a discovery anywhere. And look, obviously, we've got big companies looking at us. That goes without saying. But we make a discovery anywhere. And I will immediately box that off. And when I say box it up, I will get a team dedicated to that site and that work will continue. We are not going to then pause. The market will fund it. The industry will fund it. And we keep going and going and going. And that will happen on any project that we have. And that will be, you will see that unfold. But until we get that absolute strike, you're not going to see that. But what that does, that enables us to build, because we're not here for egos. We're here to make money. I'm only here to make money. And I make no apologies about that, because, you know, it's the capital markets we're in.
What do you reckon, Mark? Dotted Lake next time? I reckon we should probably go for another one.
I don't
one.
Know. I think we need to perhaps, cover Dotted Lake, particularly, or indeed Ubonga. I mean, you've set down two discoveries you want in 12 months' time. And you say you've waited and waited, now you're ready to go. But you did say, you know, that it's going to be the most extensive and active 12 months of exploration on Ubonga. I mean, you know, we haven't really talked about sort of the awkward area in the graphite project as well. I know that was something you were quite excited about. Well, but when can you release plans? When will you communicate to the market what you're going to do and at what particular area on the Ubonga project? Because that's what's really important, isn't it? And I think lots of different news is coming out. We can see different things have been falling into place, you know, presumably with the permits now granted, the First Nations are on site. So everything looks like it's sort of lined up. But where's the kind of target? Where's the meat?
Yeah, so the low-hanging fruit for us, and that's our feelings internally, is Dotted Lake. It's right. An absolute obvious target to go for in the short term. And that's due to the known work done by GT with Glencore coming in. And look, Glencore has got 16.7% of GT. 100% they're looking at us and what we're doing. Okay, the fact that we've now got this permit and they're going to see us going to work, you know, I would expect or hope that there'll be progress there. But it will be Dotted Lake. And right. On Ubonga, as a minimum, you already know for certain that we will be Wishbone in February. And the reason that is we've got some ice holes there. And historically in Ontario, now, somebody might be able to quote, I might be misquoting, but I've read 75% of mines in Ontario are under lakes. And the reason is quite simple, that sulfides are a softer rock. So when you've got an ice sheet scrapes across where the sulfides are, that actually goes deeper and gouges out an extra layer. That then, your ice sheet melts, that then becomes a lake. So your deposits are actually hidden by the lake. And I know for a fact that the Yann has a suspicion, and that isn't confirmed. It's only a feeling that that's possibly what's happened at Wishbone, and that's where your core deposit sits. You can only drill those in winter because you need a minimum of 600 mil of ice. So we know for certain that's going to happen in February. Now, I could build onto that. But as I say, by within 12 months, you're going to see six separate drilling campaigns. Like, we haven't even talked about the conduit theory on Awkward, and that garners a lot of interest from majors. Mm.
So, well, we look forward, Darren, to seeing the drilling at Wishbone in February for that VMS target, and Dotted Lake, the low hanging fruit, copper nickel cobalt.
Yeah, it's in a serpentinite belt. It's a separate from the gold that we tested a couple of years back.
Yeah, okay. But you never know what drilling will show up. To be fair,
yeah, it might show up 27 meters of graphite.
Yeah, exactly.
And you look at Empire Metals. You know, they've got a stunning discovery in Oz. And I wish you all the best. Those guys were drilling for copper. You drill, you don't know.
I know. Javier on, you know, Greatland Gold, they didn't know what they were going to discover down there. They were just hopeful. Sovereign Metals, again, you know, there was a bit of a serendipity there when they discovered that titanium graphite system. Yeah, I mean, like many of the biggest deposits in the world, you don't actually know. It's just... Honestly, the word that you don't want to say, but which people need to accept, you're lucky. Sometimes you just get lucky.
Yep. And what's the one common denominator out of all of them?
They all drilled. Yeah.
They all drilled. And the market needs to wake up to the fact they need to allow junior explorers to fail in their drilling. As long as the geological modelling's right, you have to give them that ability to drill.
Until they hit the big one.
Because they eventually will, if they've got the right geological team.
Wonderful.
Guys, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you too, Darren.
Been fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye then.
Yeah, bye.